26 or so.
We had a huge meeting on Route 9 at Arthur Chase's place. And I think we had about 250 people there. And we had everybody involved in transportation. You know, we had the Secretary of Transportation. We rented a private train, started it in Boston, brought out the Secretary of Transportation and the Governor, and he got to drive the train out to Caucasus. It was like a kid.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
fun.
Driving the train. And we picked up the mayor of Newton. We stopped in Newton. We picked up the, we stopped in Wellesley. We picked up the selectmen. We stopped in Framingham and picked up the selectmen. We stopped in Ashland and picked up the selectmen.
What a train this was.
Yeah, it was a great thing. And it stopped in the Westboro at the old station. And we rented school buses and brought the whole train load over to Arthur Chase's place.
Which was what? The
printing press place.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yes. Chase Paper.
Chase Paper, yeah. And we had a huge banquet. Lunch. And everybody was there. Hesse Otis, who owns Cumberland Farms. And at that time, there were different industries than there are now.
Yeah, but you had all the industrial leaders. And
everybody was there.
And your pitch was?
And we said one thing to the governor. We want suburban train service in Westboro. Well, he was a little overwhelmed, of course. What could he say?
You let him run the train.
He make every effort.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Sure.
But, of course, although we had the Worcester Chamber of Commerce people down, and we had the representatives from the city of Worcester here, in fact, we were the tail trying to wag the dog. And if the Worcester had displayed similar energy, we would have had, now have, commuter service,
but
you
needed the large
they
cities
needed.
To be
no matter how fast and how hard we wagged our tail, we couldn't move the dog.
And Worcester wanted to maintain its rail center?
No, Worcester was in the Worcester politicians who had been courted by the bus companies. And they were opposed to any competition to the bus companies. Now, this was never openly expressed in a way, but that was the fact.
And Westboro was, at that point, had pretty good bus service. Didn't it, Carlstrom?
Outrageous.
Our bus service is now, I don't know
it
what
it was.
It's
always bad. They don't provide any stations. They let you up in the slush of Route 9.
Is that it right now? Is it just Route 9?
Sure.
It used to be
they
some
had
local
one from this town.
Yeah.
But even now, you know, there was no station or comfort or anything. At any rate, we didn't get the commuter service.
If, what would have to be done to the depot? Now, is there something about Bay State owning the depot and Conrail owning part of the roof that goes over the track? I've heard lots of stories, Harold, and I don't know what.
Conrail owns the railroad right of way, which the depot is right up next to it. The building, of course, is not on the right of ways, and they sold the building. It was for sale and Bay State bought it. They use it as a storage warehouse.
Would there be any problem in the town or somebody buying back the depot?
Yes, because the town doesn't want a depot. The traffic.
Again, the town itself.
See, they're already, every time that a new bakery shop opens up, somebody complains about the traffic, right? Imagine a depot here. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have people from Northborough and Southborough and every place else driving. And there's no parking down here. A train station's any good once you got a place to park. So, if they put in a stop in Westboro, it would have to be down on Flanders Road. And, of course, that brings me back to something I left out. I was talking about Wally Yaffe and his imagination and his drive as a developer. In order to make anything out of Flanders Road, it was necessary that an access road be built down there. Washington Street couldn't take the trucks, and people were screaming down there anyway about trucks. So Wally Yaffe figured out that there was money available in the federal treasury to build access to interstate highways to competing transportation facilities. Now, how would that work? Let's say an interstate up in New York went by the Erie Canal, and a community wanted to have a transfer station from canal barge freight to truck freight. There was money in the federal treasury to build that connection to the interstate highway. Mm-hmm. Or supposing it went by another place up in New York State, and there was an airport there, and the people wanted a connection from the interstate to the airport. There was money in the federal treasury appropriated to connect the
different
interstate.
Different modes of transportation, yeah. Right.
It had never been used to connect a railroad. Never.
Oh.
But that provision of the federal law was used to finance what is now called Walk-Up Drive. That's the road that goes down from Route 9 to Flanders Road. And it ends in a peculiar spot.
Where does it end?
Right on Flanders Road, if you'll notice.
I thought it ended in the railroad yard.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
But it was supposed to, because the only reason federal government ever spent any of their money was not to help Westboro solve a local traffic problem. There was legally no justification for it. It was to get access to the rail facilities down there on the interstate highway.
No, it did give access to these rail facilities, though, didn't it? I mean,
The bridge was never built over Flanders Road, and it never went right up to the edge of the railroad. But that would be where this commuter station should be, and that's where it was meant to be. That's what the money was spent for that road for, was for that station.
Now, however, cars are unloaded there, and trucks do use that.
We use it as freight, but it isn't. You know, it has no use as a passenger station. You see, the theory was that the passenger trains, I put that in plural, would stop there. Not only the commuting trains, but the Chicago train, and also the New York trains, which we hope to get running through here again. And it would also be an intermodal stop, because the buses could come off the interstates, and they could all exchange passengers in one place. So if your kid was going to camp, he could take maybe the train from outside of Detroit, where you lived, and ship him up to here. And then he'd get off at an intermodal terminal, and he could get on the Greyhound or whatever and go up to Maine. Intermodal. See, it was all under one roof. And this was a beautiful theory.
Also geared toward passenger. I heard it geared toward freight before.
It was geared to freight,
But passenger was part of it.
But you see, the combination of the Penn Central going bankrupt and the change in the political administrations, these things take a long time.
Now, Penn Central went bankrupt right in the 70s.
Mm. See, that killed it.
I know that I'm pretty sure the access road was finished in 1974, at least going back to the records.
Yeah.
They started talking about it in 69,
yeah,
70,
right,
but I think it was completed.
Yeah, that was
in
a tremendous thing that Yaffe put that whole thing through.
Especially the smallest federal highway. Country.
Yeah.
I think it's a mile or something.
Yeah, and the whole thing was geared towards this very up-forward type of thing that would have, if it had been finished, it would have been a model for the whole country.
But
you got a change of administration. The planning was all done under Governor...
It was the guy that was the transportation man.
The Republican.
I thought Volpe was in charge of something. Secretary
of Transportation. Yeah, well, he was involved in it, but then right after him, there was a governor. I've forgotten his name even.
Okay.
He was a big horse-facing Yankee guy. As long as those people were in, you see, it was possible to keep going
yeah.
through the state bureaucracy. But once they get out and the Democrats get back in, the bus people climb right back up on top and they scuttle the whole thing.
Okay. So actually what we have now is a semi-freight transfer. I mean, it works. There are trucks picking up these, with, unloaded are these Chrysler cars. Are they unloaded in?
See, the original concept was that, you see, for example, now you see these furniture vans in Westboro
mm-hmm.
picking up electronic stuff, and they're all air-supported, you know, cushioned, and they take them to the West Coast or wherever they make the sale of computers. The idea was those things would leave their factory and come down to Westboro for this modern terminal. They get onto the train. If they're bound for the West Coast, that's where they go.
Mm-hmm.
If they're bound for Chicago, they'd go there. So then they'd be unloaded or trucked around.
Right.
It was the idea of helping the smaller manufacturer compete.
Mm-hmm.
This would also be true for Norton's or Bay State or anybody who was shipping out, you see. They wouldn't ship directly. They'd load it all on trucks, but they'd all be brought to the central port.
So as far as you know, shipping out right now is only General Motors that really takes...
Shipping in General Motors. I mean, no, it's Chrysler and...
They're shipping out of Framingham.
Yeah.
And Chrysler is shipping in and unloading. Where
right.
does it come from? Where the Chrysler...
Windsor, Ontario.
Windsor, Ontario, these things are coming from? I also heard there was corn syrup unloaded down there. Big vats of corn syrup.
Well, that's for the bakery.
Really?
Cumberland Farms. Yeah, they couldn't operate a bakery down there, really. But they not only get their corn syrup, they also get all their grain.
I wanted to ask you, what is using the tracks now? We were talking about, you said corrugated paper gets something out of the railroad side.
Cumberland Farms is a big user.
Bakery.
They get a lot of groceries.
Their warehouse is for all New England here,
right.
distribution center, so that they use that rail.
Oh, sure. When they put the building up, they're very advanced. The rail track goes right inside the building, so you don't see most of the cars that are unloaded.
Is that right?
Oh, sure.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, they unload them in comfort.
So
it's just the tankers outside.
Would a company build a track into its own?
Yes, they have to pay for it here. In other countries, like in Germany or France or England, no, just Germany, France, the railroad pays for that track.
Mm-hmm.
Here they have to pay.
So we have Cumberland Farms using it. Who else? Anybody else? That's
Bay State uses
it
sporadically.
What does Bay State get? They just get grinding?
They don't get, I think just, I don't know what they get.
Some materials.
Yeah, some materials. They used to get everything.
Is that the only train that comes up now? Is one servicing Bay State? Are trains coming up behind you here, or does it just go right into Bay State? Or how does it work?
Just, oh yes, and they also use it. That's what they call a team track. And that goes, the public has access to that track. If you wanted to buy, for example, a carload of grapes.
I could do that, a railroad car of grapes.
Now, that's the kind of traffic that comes into Framingham. So you have a large Italian community there. And a bunch of families get together at wine processing time, and they buy a carload of grapes, and then they unload it, and they divide it, and they make their own wine.
So that could happen where, and where is that? Where does
right
it end?
Back here.
And behind you. Is it who owns that area? Is that still Bay State?
Bay State, but the railroad has rights of way there. People who use the railroad do.
But as far as you're concerned, mostly you won't be seeing trains coming up behind Hickox Building.
I think in the very near future, right now you don't know, but I think in the future probably Bay State will start using them again. Because
with the deregulation
and
the competitive prices.
Right.
Okay, so
hopefully.
So basically, yeah, Bay State, corrugated has a little sidetrack that it gets.
They're very good, they use it a lot.
Shipping out boxes?
Not too much, but shipping the raw material in. And Then the refrigerated warehouse right over.
Where's that?
The Otis Street. They get frozen food.
Winter Hill, is that the one? That's right, I forget the train runs over Otis Street, is it?
They get frozen food.
They send it out too, is it?
Well, they distribute it by trucks. Comes in by rail.
So that the potential is there for, well, if the factories are there too, but they do have access to this.
Yeah, there is still a potential, but of course the land is fast disappearing.
Yeah, and it's being used by different types of things.
And also the zoning is bad here.
As far as factories go and everything,
nobody wants it.
They're more geared
toward the plastics company uses it.
Oh, plastics. Which one is that one?
It's off Otis Street.
Off Otis Street.
It's a brand new plant, runs 24 hours a day. They make these bags you put stuff in. Plastic bags.
Hmm.
Isn't that wonderful? We think that we export something else from this town.
We do, huh?
Yeah.
Very modern. Not microfilm. I'm not sure.
That's a microfilm.
It's a microfilm?
Something like that. You know, they have I think they have two big railroad cars there all the time full of plastic pellets they import, or they bring in.
Now, I'm trying to think of where the track goes. It comes out of Cedar Swamp. It comes from Framingham. Is that what you're saying? Across and enters Westboro.
Goes along the edge of Cedar Swamp. It was never built in the swamp. It went along high ground right in the edge.
This is right along Flanders, then.
Yeah.
And then it comes. What happens to it? It comes up here on East Main, by East Main, and over the bridge.
Right.
And there's a spur that comes up
and it goes
behind
up
you,
the back
right?
Of the,
okay.
Yeah. Then it goes up through Otis. Goes crosses Otis Street.
First, we gotta get through town. What does it do? It goes up behind Water High, crosses
behind
High.
It's behind Robin Road. Down there. It's kind of a no man's land.
Yeah, how does it get to? I see it surfacing again. I forget. I don't really quite sure how it gets. I know it crosses up by Corrugated and across. And down parallel to Maynard Street, must be.
No, it goes across Maynard Street, parallel to Fisher Street for a while. Runs parallel with Fisher Street all the way out to Shrewsbury. Crosses over Arch Street at the way out of the...
Now, let's say this microplastic or whatever plastics company. Would they have a railroad train, track?
Yes, they have a track. They put it in. They paid for it.
All right. So they have a train would let off or
a train
drop
stops
off there.
Every day and takes off a couple of railroad cars full of their raw material and puts it on the siding and they unload it. Then the train comes down to Corrugated Paper and stops. Takes cars off, puts it on the siding. Before that, it's probably also stopped at Winter Hill and dropped cars off there full of food. And then it goes through here and maybe stops at Bay State and leaves off some material for them in a boxcar. Then it goes down to Flanders Road and drops off some automobiles. And then it goes there into Cumberland Farms and drops off a carload full of sugar. In syrup form, corn syrup, and carloads of grain, and carloads of everything that you eat. Because most groceries leave the packing plants on the rail cars. You know, like canned soups, and canned vegetables.
Say it again, they leave the groceries in what?
They leave the factories, the canneries in rail cars. They ship in large volumes.
And I know that this is a distribution center also for their soft drinks, Westboro is. They bottle
it. Oh, it is?
Yeah.
You know, they buy a lot of stuff.
They make it, and they bottle it here.
Oh, yeah, they probably got cars full of bottles and stuff.
Ginger ale, whatever.
Cans.
Sure.
They don't ship them. I have a friend who's in the bottle business. He told me that he makes his own bottles now out of plastic.
Hmm.
He doesn't ship. Life is so wonderful, you know. They used to have to make the bottles and then bring them to the plant, fill them, bring them out, bring them back again, clean them, and so forth. Now they just bring all plastic into the plant. He makes the bottles right there and fills them.
I think they do that here. I come from, yeah.
So they probably get carloads of plastic to make
plastic,
the bottles.
Plastic, yeah. And then maybe the raw ingredients that go into whatever the drinks are making. Right. So there's quite a bit, Harold, of freight being dropped off that you just mentioned about six companies, perhaps. Not maybe what they used to have when they had the straw hats and the boots and the...
Well, there are still active rail units.
And that would be all... are these all Conrail still?
Yeah, right.
And I'm just curious, I haven't quite got it in my head. Let's say Microfilm, which is quite far down on Otis Street, a car might be dropped off at their spur or whatever. Would they come and get it, or would they have
It's put right up to their door.
Would the train actually bring it right up to their door?
Yeah, right up to their door, right where they want to have it unloaded.
And then
they call it spotting it.
Spotting it? Door to door delivery or whatever.
Right.
And then the train would make a loop or whatever and get back on the main track?
Well, however it gets back.
However trains do that. Switch or whatever.
Switch or something.
It's a lot more than I thought. I had a feeling that the freight was just going in and out and in and out or going through.
Oh, no.
But I knew that there was an unloading of cars, but that's about all I did know. But no passengers anymore. And you say, can you describe the depot? What did the depot look like? Was it just a regular, good-looking depot? Or?
Well, on the end, facing the street, was the Railway Express office.
That was facing the
And there were probably, I imagine, all told, there were five or six or seven or eight very well-paid employees there in trucks. And they were the United Parcel UP of the time, Railway Express agents. Of course, they were killed by two things. One was the fact that the train service went to hell, but more important than that was that they had one of the most ferocious unions in the country. After you went through there, the first thing you did when you went by was the express office. They were always very friendly people, and you could, it was always a hello when you went by. And the last agent that worked there, his wife worked with him. So she was out lifting the boxes around with her. And their job was to go to every train with one of those carts that you see. And the express going eastbound would be put on the eastbound trains. And of course, there was a lot of flowers shipped out of Westbrook.
The carnations.
Yeah, right.
The flowers were, huh?
And a lot of chickens were shipped into Westboro then. So you had...
Okay, chickens shipped.
It was an interesting walk into the station because you'd hear the chirp, chirp, chirp of the little chickens. Smell the flowers.
Sounds
beautiful.
Good. This was what, 40s? 50s?
What?
When was this?
This was
were you
in the
smelling
early
the
50s.
Early 50s.
Yeah.
And the chickens would go to the chicken farms.
Right, sure. The Fennos had huge chicken farms.
So you smelled good, sounded good. You went past that, and then...
You went past that. Then,
do you know who the agents
don't remember.
Were?
Then you went in, and they had a huge central steam-heated radiator. It must have been 4 or 5 feet in diameter. It was a circle. And in the cold weather, it was always hissing with warmth. It was a beautiful thing. You could go up and put your gloves on, take them off, and make toast away.
Like a big steam stove, really. In the center.
Right in the center of the station. And then on the left of the waiting room was a newsstand where you could buy papers and various other things that you shouldn't be buying, like bars of candy, stuff to eat. And coffee. They sold coffee. And the benches were all around the station.
On the sides, were they, or in the middle?
On the sides. All around. And then straight ahead of you as you came in, that was on the left as you came in, straight ahead of you was the ticket office. And there was always the chattering of the telegraph in the ticket office. You knew that things were running because you were hearing chattering.
When you say the chattering of the telegraph, it would just come in, all the...
It was always ticking, the telegraph instrument. You ever heard one?
No, only in movies.
Well, that's where it was.
What would they be sending in? They'd be sending in messages?
Oh, they sent in everything. They sent in messages. The railroad had a telegraph line coming in. The agent could sit down and telegraph Boston to find out what time the train left. You could telegraph Framingham to see if the train had left Framingham. They could telegraph him and say there was a little boy who should have got off the train at Ashland and he didn't. Would you please go to the train and make sure when he gets off that he gets back, put back on the next train, his mother's waiting for him, that kind of thing.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
They did all that telegraph. Then the...
Do you know how much a ticket cost? Do you remember it all?
I don't know.
Boston or Worcester? Okay. And benches?
The agent sold you the tickets. They were always local people. There are quite a few of them because it was open, I don't know, 17 or 18 hours a day, as I remember. And they only worked, you know, shifts,
mm-hmm.
7 days a week. So a lot of people worked down there. They were good paying jobs and there was competition for them.
There was I heard a train that ran out by midnight or something that left Boston for the theater crowd.
Right.
Leave around
11
or whatever to get.
So you could buy commuting tickets, 30-day passes, but you know, you could buy tickets to wherever you wanted to go.
Did quite a few people use the train commuting? I know that in the early 20s and 30s they said that they were crowded.
They were crowded right up until the end. That they lost a lot of business in other towns, but they never lost it in Westboro. There was always a lot of people using trains, particularly students. Going into Boston to school. And young women who worked in Boston. It was a special train for them, really. It left Boston 5:10. And it ran almost express. It got out here. Way under an hour.
45 minutes or so would be a good run. But
yeah, it was very, very fast.
You're making me very nostalgic still.
When I worked in Boston as a lawyer, my secretary lived in Westboro, and her father was Noah Train, who ran the shoe store up here. And it was understood that, you know, she had to knock off at 4:30 because her train left at 5:10.
She was going to be on that train.
Right.
And
she had to walk from Tremont Street down to the South Station.
That's where the trains came in, was that station?
Yeah, right.
Okay. And did you take the train then, commute yourself for quite a while?
I never did.
Because you came here?
I got a job in Worcester, which to me was the end of the world. It was like going to Borneo, for God's sake. I was used to Boston.
The world drops off after.
At Dedham, there's nothing left, right? And, I said
that you could get from Westboro to Boston, and there was a tie.
Westboro was so much different. It's always been a very friendly town, and you ride on the train for a few months, and you knew everybody in the train. Now, previous to that, I commuted to Boston from Concord, and I rode on the train for 2 or 3 years from Concord to Boston. I didn't know one person on the train.
But you did when you were riding.
As soon as you rode from Westboro, you knew everybody.
But you said you did ride Westboro to Boston then.
No, to Worcester.
To Worcester, that way, that direction, okay.
Yeah.
But you did take the commuter train.
Yeah, right.
And the town itself, you think the people in it were friendly, or just
much different.
Interesting.
Yeah, much different.
I see the same faces every day.
Well, you didn't have to.
Were the cars comfortable? Or did they, by that time...
Oh, sure. No, no, they're beautiful.
Really?
They had a big smoking car, which I used, leather seats, very expensive upholstery.
What years are the 50s? Are you talking 40s? 50s. And so they were not beginning to get downtrodden at all.
Oh, no, no. Yes, and then, for people who didn't want to be a smoker, they were the regular coaches. They are very advanced for their ages. It's only recently that you've thought of the airlines have thought of segregating people who smoked.
Right.
But they always did.
Railroads always did. Now, that didn't have any dining car, did it?
Oh, no, it's a commuter train.
Commuter train. Dining cars were just through once
there
to Chicago
time, so.
And all that, and conductors. But sounds like we had a pretty good service right up until, as you said, you think it stopped. Late 50s. But you know,
maybe it was the early 60s. I really don't know.
Okay.
You've heard the story about the last train.
No, tell me the story about the last train. I was waiting for you to tell me the story of the last train.
Oh, other people will probably tell you about it. But there was a man who ran the newsroom called Bill Ford. And his father had a livery stable.
That's the John Ford, yeah.
Just down about where Daisy's Diner is, I guess. Just about there was his livery stable. So Bill Ford grew up right next to the railroad tracks, and